I know it's the final day and the rain started to come down. I recognize many people's spirits a little lower too, but we'll just go through this final part to look at some amazing aspects to link what Eve was saying, but more importantly, look at what needs to be done to really integrate human rights education into the UPR system. And this was alluded to in the earlier panel with Ramdan as well as our guest from Morocco. Eve brought up a couple of really good points that I think are important just to touch upon of why the UPR is a great tool for human rights education. There really is, for the first time from 2008 to 2012, and will continue to do so, to provide an updated amount of information every 4.5 years now. We have three documents as teaching tools. We have the first one being the NGO compilation. And it's amazing because you can look at the NGO compilation, but then, as Eve pointed out, go underneath to the specific NGO from that country and see what they're doing. You look at that 10-page document, but also at their 5- and 10-page reports, and it really does show how they're looking at not just international law, but how they've brought it to the local level and how relevant it is in their life. That's very important. The second one is important, too, because it also looks at all the international instruments. It's another teaching tool to explain to students how it's all interconnected, where it actually says, this is from the treaty bodies, this is from the special procedures, this is from even the UN agencies of UNICEF, and it really does allow you to compare what do the people say on the ground with what the UN official bodies look at. And then third, you have the 20 pages from a government. So no longer is it a just, you know, there's one source, but it's three main ones with three unique views. So it allows students to really understand what are the human rights issues from all the different perspectives and to see how the governments approach it as well. Before this, before the UPR was created, you only had maybe Amnesty International's annual reports, which weren't comprehensive. Or you had the U.S. State Department, who are very political and commenting on someone. Or you have China just commenting on just the United States. So it was definitely the political aspect, where this time it is, in a way, not a perfectly pure, but a good teaching tool to be able to juxtapose and compare the three of them. So I think that's very valuable. But also you even have the discussion. You have the 3.5 hours, and what you can do is you can have that document to read, but you can also show the webcast. So we've been doing that in classes in Hawaii, and we find that very positive. And the one last thing I think is also really good is a lot of times there's no real way for students to see how it interacts. So role plays. Everyone has Model UN or tries to do that. But most students these days are focusing on what to wear to look like someone supposedly from that country. They don't really look at the content. But the UPR allows you to get beyond that and really look at the content and have examples to be able to do that role play. So we do a Model UN UPR, and that's actually something they'll do in my class next week, where they'll do a role play, and you know they follow the what was written, but it also evolves. It's the next cycle. So they can then say what the countries would say or what they wouldn't say. So I do believe what Eve was pointing out is a very good point, and it also provides the basis for what we can do as using this UPR as a teaching tool. Now, getting to the other part of the talk, which I think is very valuable as well, is it came up in Ramdan's discussion earlier yesterday when he talked about education not being just what we teach, but how we teach it, how we infuse it, by living that model. So I think that's an important part of what we're showing. But the other point he did talk about was also this morning, how countries love to attach their name to declarations to then show that they care, but maybe they don't match up to that. And what I'll be proposing this morning is a way to actually allow them to have the declaration attached to themselves, but more importantly, actively work on it every year, every UPR session, actually, and also with the different treaty bodies as well, but predominantly through the UPR. So one thing I think we can do and what we should look at in the future is actually maybe using one other group that really did a good job in the first cycle. I believe the LGBT QIA, they're adding more acronyms to the gay rights movement, but they did a good job at making the first round a litmus test for every country. No matter what country you were, they would always make sure they got one question about gay rights in the UPR. And this would infuriate some countries. How can you bring this up? But it also was a good way to see where is gay rights around the world. And then it also allowed them to mobilize on resolutions and other activities. And what I propose is that we should actually do something similar. we should actually systematize the issue of human rights education at the UPR. So this morning we had Morocco discussing with the poll. And I was trying to think of another word for the poll. I think platform is probably the best word, or what they use, the human rights education training platform that involves the Philippines, Senegal, Morocco, Switzerland, and other countries. And what we need to do, and this is where it comes down to us with what we've been studying over the last couple of days, is we really need to think together as a community of human rights educators, what is the best question? What is the best recommendation that we can draft, that we can write, that we can then put into the hands of this platform of human rights education trainer countries and make sure that systematically through every UPR, no matter who comes up, they have specific questions that then demand the government to respond and provide information. That then puts human rights education on the agenda of the UPR. This has also been done a little bit with the issue of climate change for every Pacific Island state, demanding their national plans of adaptation and mitigation. But I think we as a collective of human rights educators and trainers can actually make sure that for every country that comes before the UPR, and it's not written yet, and there are different models that I've looked at because I also had a resolution at the UN on human rights learning, but really 2 to 3 really good questions that get to the core of the problems we're focusing on, that we have these things adopted, but then no follow-up. So what are they doing to implement the articles of the Declaration on Human Rights Education and Training? Please provide examples of curriculum. And that way then after the next 4.5 years, we would actually be able to look at each country. More importantly, when you come up and your questions regarding human rights are brought up, it's then a follow-up as well of, have you added the new courses? Have you added the new curriculum? What are you doing in this process? And that way then we systematically organize in each country the question of human rights education, and more importantly, see how each country is actually doing something. Because I think it was brought up really well by Monique, we have 40 branches of EIP around the world. There's 193 countries. Even in the 40 branches we have, we don't know what's happening in every state. But we can use the UPR as an opportunity to force states to bring it up and discuss it, and more importantly, respond and be held accountable to talking about what they're doing with human rights education, more importantly, how they're improving, and that we can also use that as well when you go home to then say, you received this question, you received this recommendation, we want to have this curriculum, we want to have these resources, and you already said at the UPR you agreed to this recommendation, so now let's implement that back home. So then it's also a lobbying tool for you when you return home to then make sure they fulfill promises that they make in Geneva. And that way then we can get to some of the issues that our brother from Liberia was discussing, because if there is no mechanism, if there is just a declaration, then we need to see what mechanisms do exist. We can bring it up under CERD, we can bring it up under especially the Covenant on Economic Social Culture Rights, because there's the progressive realization under Article 2 of that. But the UPR is what everyone's participated in. So far, every country has come forward. So to be consistent, and more importantly, to really look at human rights education around the world in a coherent framework, we can actually pose these specific questions and recommendations to every government. We also then get away from the point that was brought up in our first training day about politicization, talking about the question from Zambia. Everyone will get the same question, and we can also make sure that each one of those countries in the human rights education training platform are from different regions. Since they like asking each other nice questions, human rights education is a pretty innocent, nice question to ask. Then it's our job to make sure that it actually means something, though, on the ground. So what I propose and what I think we could work on together in the future is really promoting human rights education through the UN system. First and foremost, through the UPR, as it will happen every 4.5 years, but then also, when possible, to even advance it even further through the various treaty bodies that focus on the human rights education. So I know we're close to lunch and everybody loves lunch, so I'll stop there, but then also open it for questions to be able to continue this conversation. Thank you.